I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started, so take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Okay, thank you all for being here tonight. I want to do something a little different. Go ahead and close your eyes. Take a nice deep breath. And I want you to bring your awareness to your heart space, to your spiritual heart, which is a little more centered in the body than your physical heart. And in that space, I want you to look for the energy of the natural state of expansion of the heart. So the heart space is always expanding outward in all directions, just like a little mini sun that you are. So I want you to keep your awareness there in the expansion and focus on the energy of it. It's love. It's beautiful. And now from that space, I want you to move in your awareness
whether it be through your inner sight or your imagination, however you want to think of it. But move your awareness to kind of your perfect place. It could be on this planet or not. It could be in this time frame or not. You could be in form or not. So whatever it is, just move yourself to the space that feels for you the most like home. Like when you're there, you're just completely cradled in the eternal, whatever that looks like for you. And I just want you to be there with that energy, and I want you to feel it and allow it to just consume you, just be in it, rock in it. Yeah. Very good. Take a few nice deep breaths in this energy. All right. You don't have to leave the space, but please do bring your awareness back to me now. Okay. Pielian, was that a particularly nice little exercise?
Very.
Can you tell me your experience of it?
Yeah. When you told, when you said go into the heart space, and then when you said I think you called it the spiritual heart space. Mm-hmm. And it was like, as soon as you said that, like I could feel the expansion, you know, and then it was, you know, it was kind of getting like bigger and kind of expanding out. And then when you said to go to our place, it was kind of like a travel almost, where I, at first it was like, first stop was like, what I would call home in the illumined worlds. But then it was like, I was in this space of nothing and everything at the same time, you know? And it was just, I don't know.
A little beyond words?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good, good. So the reason that I started off with this little exercise tonight is as a reminder for all of us about why we're doing this work. Right? Because we forget on the path, it's very easy to forget, you know, because a good chunk of the yoga that we do is yoga of the mind. It is very mental, very intellectual, and it needs to be, right? Because we need to be able to see in deeper and deeper and deeper into the level that has been held in the subconscious, or even the unconscious mind. And without being able to access those areas, there are all of the conceptual constructs that hold it all in place. You know, it needs to be discovered. And because we're here in form and attached to this third dimensional reality, the way to do it most effectively, the quickest way and the most effective way, is to actually utilize the mind to get in there, you know, because it's all in the mind anyway. So, but the problem can be that we forget kind of the why of why we're doing it, right? Because we can get so stuck in it, feeling so mental all the time, that we tend to forget that there is this whole beautiful realm of energy that sits outside of our conscious awareness that we can tap into, which I just had you tap into. And in that space, you know, you're far more experiencing your natural state as much as it's possible while you're still kind of here identified with form. But the energetic of it is unmistakable. It's so different than any energetic here in the world. And the whole point is that through, you know, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of deep spiritual work, the point is to wake up to that energy that I just had you tap to the point where that's your natural state, right? So when it's so frustrating and life is hard and we're being challenged at every angle and we're being brought to our knees as we do our work because things come up that we don't know if we're going to be able to handle it the way we know we need to handle it, it's hugely challenging. It helps to have this little point of reference, right? Because not everybody has tapped that before they start this level of work. Now, if you have, then beautiful, you already have that point of reference, but not everybody has done that. So what a wonderful thing to do now and again to remind yourself, that's right, because as I continue to wade through the muck and the mire of the lower mind, there's a reason, right? It's not that it's not meant to last forever, the wading through all of the crap, right? It won't last forever. It is a temporary experience, just as everything here is. But it's tough, you know, and we're in times now that are really tough and about to get a whole lot tougher, I will tell you that. Just from a purely astrological place, the next month, 2 months are not pretty. I mean, like really bad. Really bad, part of a 5-year cycle of, and I couldn't even begin to get into the explanation of it, I'm not an astrologer, but it is part of a literal 5-year window, a 5-year cycle of transits and everything that, where all the aspects are just a mess, like an absolute mess. And so, you know, we're now midway through September, we got a solid good month and change of probably just really ugly energy. And what does that mean for you in your daily life? It means most likely you're going to experience things in your outside world that are definitely off kilter, to put it mildly, right? So Megan's with us. So Megan, at your job, you may experience your students are just like, you know, off the hook for the next month in a way that they just generally aren't. It'll test your patience and all of that. And for those of you with children, same thing, right? Or your boss at work may be just like unusually unbalanced, right? And on the world scale, we'll see it as well, I'm sure. And I don't anticipate it letting up for 2018 either. I really don't. And I don't say that to be a bummer or a downer for anybody, but that's just what I'm sensing. I'm sensing 2018 is going to be an interesting walk for all of humanity, you know. So the more that you're doing now to keep digging and to keep pulling these things to the surface that need to come to the light, the more you can do that now, believe me, the better off you will be as you begin to move through, you know, as the energies continue to ramp up. Because what we're sitting in today may look like, you know, for all we know, may look like a, what do you call it? Like a piece of cake next to what we could be sitting in 6 months from now energetically, right? And so if you think now's bad, who's to say? However, you keep doing your work and you're serious about it, it won't be a problem. It won't. Actually, Megan, I'm going to ask you to kind of speak to, since you've been doing this work for quite some time. So would you like to speak to, you know, the Megan that you were bad way to say it, the Megan you believed yourself to be when you started your journey, could she have handled what the Megan you consider yourself to be now has been moving through in the last year, let's say?
No.
Okay, why do you think that is?
Sometimes I think back to, I'll think back a few years even, and or something, you know, just even in my early 20s or in my teens, and I don't know that person anymore. It's very interesting, because that person, and I'm not trying to detach myself from Megan, but I'm just saying who I was then, was just this ball of worry. There was no balance in any shape or form. It was very difficult to even make decisions because everything was just so fear-based. Mm-hmm. That I don't even know how I operated in the world. I at this point, I really don't. So when I look back on who I was just even 4 years ago, I wouldn't be able to handle the stuff that's in my life presently if I have not done this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Like, it really is.
I would have fallen apart.
Right. So, you know, I like to have someone like you speak to that because I don't want to seem scary to people, especially those who are newer to this level of the spiritual journey. But, you know, reality, so to speak, is what it is. And yeah, there are energies coming that, I mean, you have to look at it, the entire collective of humanity, right? Now those of you who are on this, in this session with me, and those who will witness this session at some later point, all of you are prepared for this, or you wouldn't even be in my awareness. I mean, you just wouldn't, or wouldn't have me in your awareness. So, you are like the, you know, probably 5% of humanity, right? Because humanity by and large is not in the same space all of you are. As unprepared as you think you are, I promise you, you know, if you really spend time out in just the world, and most of you have kind of cut yourself off to a certain degree from really engaging in the level of the average daily, you know, experience of the world. But if you were just to jump back in, I think you'd all be very surprised at how like the base level that people are functioning from. It's really kind of shocking. You know, I forget because I'm kind of sequestered most of the time in my world. And when I do travel, I travel mostly with my husband, and he's there to facilitate me in the work that I need to do when I'm traveling. So we hold a very sacred space together when I do travel. So it's really unusual for me to function kind of in the world really at that level. And I was, when I was up in New York during the summer, I had an opportunity to be at a family gathering. It wasn't a party, but it was a gathering, kind of like a picnic kind of thing. And you know, I just forget how, what it's like to kind of not be on a conscious path and to just be in the world. So I was just watching, observing everybody during the day and how they functioned and what they did and what they talked about, you know, just all of that. And at one point there was a conversation going on concerning the differences and which was better, bourbon or scotch, right? And I don't have anything against bourbon or scotch, not at all. But it was interesting to me listening and watching that here was a whole group of people, and everybody who was of drinking age was drinking all day, you know, with the exception of me, because I just didn't feel a need to. I don't have a problem with it. I just didn't want anything. And, You know, it was just like, wow, like you forget, you know, you just forget. Like here are people that they don't seem unbalanced, right? But yet you watch and through the conversation, you realize like alcohol, you realize what a substantial part of their life alcohol takes up, right? And for others, maybe it would be some kind of a drug, you know, not maybe a prescription drug for, you know, like an upper or a downer or something. And then for others, you know, recreational drugs. And we forget now, it's so easy to get kind of displaced from it. You forget how prevalent it is in the world. And all of these things, you know, they're used as crutches in some form or another, right? They're used as a means of either escaping something or of even creating something, which of course they're, you know, they're both pretty much the same thing. But you're either drinking because you want to escape feeling lonely, feeling bored, feeling dissatisfied, right? Or you want to do it because you want to have fun. Well, isn't it kind of the same thing when you really look at it? If you're doing it because you feel like it needs to be part of you having fun, it means you're really wanting to escape this other thing that's not fun, right? Two sides of the same coin. And, you know, that's where people function from. And with these energies continuing to come the way they're coming, you know, the reality of it is that people are going to get pushed, and they're going to get pushed hard. Right now, every one of you here has felt pushed. I know that. I include myself in that. I certainly walk that. And of course, it's part of your journey to be pushed, right? If you weren't pushed by spirit, there would be no growth. I mean, let's just look at the human condition, right? Humans are humans, and without being pushed out of their comfort zones to the place where they have to take action and make change, by and large, they won't do it. All the higher conscious people actually go out of their way to do things like that without having to be pushed from external sources. And the energies will continue. So the people who are already out there relying, you know, weekly, if not daily, on things like alcohol or drugs to give them some sense of balance in their lives, you know, like, what are they going to do? Will there be some who will be pushed so hard that it'll actually push them so far over that they come around and kind of wake up? Yeah, that'll be beautiful for them. Will there be those who are going to get pushed hard and they're just going to continue to just tank indefinitely? Yeah, that's going to happen too. Absolutely. Right. And so it's like this natural way of the human species is kind of doing its own weeding itself out with the help of universal energies, you know, and it's going to come down to choices. People are just going to have to wake up to the fact that they have to make conscious choices rather than allowing the patterning to make the choice for them. And they're just along for a ride, you know, hopefully, which is, you know, that's how 95% of the population functions anyway, right? Completely oblivious to the fact that they're functioning on an unconscious level. So maybe because the universe is going to start pushing so hard, it's going to be enough for people to actually pop awake, even if it's just momentarily. And that could be the start of something really beautiful, right? Really, really beautiful. And so you take the average person who's drug addicted, alcohol addicted, TV addicted, cell phone addicted, probably bigger than TV now. Take that average person, and has that average person had any remotely any kind of an experience with an expansive energy like you just went through in that exercise. No. They have no idea what that feels like. No idea. Now, some will out there, but they generally aren't the ones who are addicted to different things in their lives, right? Because they're not the ones running, right? So it's important. That's why I wanted to lead off with it tonight. It is important to take the time now and again. You know, you don't have to do it every day, right? Because like when you're in meditation, you're not terribly like active generally, but you can be. So every now and again, utilize it. Go in specifically to do just what I did with you. You know, move very, very consciously into the heart, focus on the expansion, and then bring yourself internally to wherever it is for you that feels like home. That's the word I'd use, you know, home, home in God. And just allow yourself to just sit there for a while. Soak it up. Just be there. Because that's real. That is so real. So much more real than anything else you're doing in your daily life. I promise you that. And that's where you're headed, right? On this path of rediscovering who you are. That's where you're headed. It's bad language because you're not actually going anywhere, right? Nowhere to go. So forgive the language of it. It's just easier for people to think that there's like a continuum. You know, I'm here now and I got to go there. This is the path. Even using the word path is a little difficult because it shows time, right? And space. So yeah, so that's the whole thing. Just take the time, get yourselves, you know, I don't spend a lot of time as a teacher bringing people, you know, purposefully into these kind of blissed out states. And all of you who've worked with me for a long time know that, right? We spend a whole lot more time really into the nitty gritty and the pain and all of that. And I allow for the space for you to have your own beautiful experiences and to share them, but I generally don't purposefully take people into them, you know, because it's very easy to get kind of seduced into hanging out there. And that becomes your latest addiction. And that is a big one for people. For people who are, you know, of the new age world or seekers or whatever you want to call them, but people who do get into meditation, it's very easy to get stuck in the space where it does become an addiction. It's like you have that sense of, oh gosh, I mean, you know, addiction becomes your glass of scotch in essence. I just had this visual because in the world something's going on and it's really difficult, and then you have that moment of, God, I can't wait to get home and go home and meditate. Hands, anybody experienced that before? I can't wait to get home and meditate. Yeah. Whew, I need to get back to my core, get back to my bliss, right? Why? Because we have a preference, and our preference is for bliss instead of for negative states of mind. It's an addiction. Right. Anything that when we move preference over to the positive states of mind and we're doing everything in our power to get there and stay there, you're addicted to that. Right. And that's not healthy. Now that's going to challenge a lot of people because people realize, so what are you telling me? I'm not telling you that it's a bad thing to do things that feel good. What I'm telling you is if you are purposefully running from the things that feel bad in order to get to the things that feel good, there's your work. It's right there. So the whole point is to be the one who is the same regardless of outside circumstances. You are the same in joy as you are the same in anger. This internal beingness is unwavering. And because it's unwavering and completely grounded in itself, it has no preference. You understand? That's where the concept that we look at about not having preference, that's where it comes from. Preference only shows that you have the belief in the concept that something can be good and something can be bad. So it starts there. And then your unmet needs lead you to believing things, having desires because you feel like you don't have this, so you need this, and because you need it, you desire it, and now you're going to do what you need to do to get it. Money, power, love, whatever it is. And if that's going on, it's only because identification is completely the only thing running the show. For the awakened being, it doesn't matter what the world brings because it doesn't alter them. Right? The world can be magical and beautiful and beautifully ordered, and the world can be chaotic and destructive. And it doesn't matter, because who you are at your core doesn't change. It feels like I just had a conversation like this with someone very recently. Rashonda, it wasn't you, was it? No? Okay. And this is important. If we're looking at the energies, right, universal planetary energies continuing to ramp up, how you hold yourself in relation to preference is going to make a big difference in how you experience all of that movement, isn't it? Huge. Because the more attached you are to feeling good, the harder it's going to be to navigate your way through what's coming. And the more you hang on to the need to control things and the need to have, you know, everything kind of lined up just right and functioning perfectly, and you troubleshooting everything and thinking five steps ahead of what's going to happen so you can make sure everything works out great, the more you hold on to that, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. It's already not pretty, right? If you function that way. It's already, I didn't speak to that.
It made me laugh because it just made me think of how, you know, like years ago, going back to this, years ago, I was like fighting these inner demons that it seemed really tough, like really tough. And it's not to say, like, the work that I do now and looking at those inner demons, it's like really tough. It is. And you have to face, like, the further you go, the deeper you go, the more you uncover. And of course it's not pretty, and it's like a hard fight every time. However, the blow doesn't seem as hard. Uh-huh. Because you're better equipped uh-huh. to handle it.
Right.
To me, it's just been my experience that with every blow that comes and I work through it and I see it for what it is, I just have like, I just think of like tools in my tool belt that I don't respond in the same way that I would have years ago.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, and it's very true. I like the analogy there, tools in the your spiritual
tool. Yeah.
That's really good. And it is true, because the more you navigate your way through these challenges, then once you've been through it once, the next time it comes around, it's not that big of a deal, right? It's like, oh, I got this. Like, I've done this before. It might not be easy, but I've done it before. So, I mean, shoot, if I've done it once, I can do it twice, right? And maybe this next time it looks a little different, and there are some different nuances to it. And some of that could be more challenging depending on what those nuances are. But once you've been through a couple doozies, you know, real doozies after that, yeah, it's not nearly as hard as we project out that it will be, you know. And I've had so many students kind of say that along the way when I say to them, you know, this work will bring you to your knees. I promise you, there will be times I mean it literally, physically, like you will just drop to the floor because it'll just take everything away from you. That's what it feels like. And that doesn't mean it's happening on a physical level. It's an internal thing that you're going through where you feel like it's just being ripped away from you. Yeah, whatever it is. And people, I think, you know, that can be really scary to hear. And I say it because I don't want anyone, I guess, in my own experience with just kind of the New Age community, what I found was happening so much was that people were, you know, in pain and then going to get instruction or assistance from whatever teacher doing whatever technique or, you know, what have you. And what I kept seeing was that there's, you know, very few teachers out there who were willing to let it be very real for the student, that the teacher would kind of always bring in this, foster their sense of joy and peace and happiness and hope, especially, right? So that they leave feeling better than they did when they walked in, as if that was the marker of if it was successful. Now, that's not a bad thing. I hope you don't think that that's what I'm saying. I'm not, right? I like to tease about laughter yoga because we used to, at our office, we had laughter yoga that would be going on, it seemed like about once a month when we'd have a session. And I'd go to the ladies' room before we'd start, and I'd be walking by and I'd hear them doing their hee 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 ha ha ha, you know, and I would just laugh because in their laughter yoga, there was no genuine laughter, you know, and I was like, wow, wouldn't it be better just to get them all together and do something outrageously truly funny and just let everyone bust a gut because it was so funny, you know? Now you're talking, that's real. That's God right there. You're not going to force that. And so these people come, why did they go to laughter yoga? Well, because they're in pain. They're in pain and they're looking for a way out of their pain. And the reason, part of the reason that I work the way I do isn't that I'm not compassionate to people's pain. Of course I am. But what I witnessed and what I feel is very real for myself is that, you know, when I was in the most pain in my life, I didn't want someone to say to me, it's okay, honey, it's all going to be okay. I wanted someone to say to me, hey, I can help you do what you need to do to shift out of this thing. And it won't be easy. That's okay. I didn't need anyone to tell me it would be easy. I knew it wouldn't be easy. If it was easy, I would have done it on my own, right? You're in pain. Obviously, you're looking for the way out. If it's easy, you do it on your own. So for me as a guide, you know, that's why I don't function that way all the time. I think it's a disservice to you as a serious student of dissolution work. or of advanced spiritual work, however you want to term it. This is advanced spiritual work. And if you're serious about it, then you also have to be serious about allowing, truly being in the space of allowance for all of the ugly stuff that has to come. And the hardest part is that by the time people make it to this level, many of them are already in very deep pain, like very deep. And they, to the point where they can't even deny it or repress it anymore. You know, most people just repress their pain. And it's so hard on them that they just are desperate and scrambling for a way out. But they at least have enough capacity to see that going about it the way the world would go about it, you know, through going out all the time and drinking and partying and, you know, all of that stuff, that like they're conscious enough to go, that's not going to do it. That's not going to fix this. It may cover it. Maybe they've already done it, covered it for a while when I was doing it. But then when I was left to myself again and the drugs wore off or the buzz wore off, like then I was still left with me and I was still miserable. So that's where they get, right? So to be this seeker at this level, like you've got to be willing to just be in it, like really, really be in it. And if you, you know, it's one of the great tests is are you capable of just not swinging yourself out, of catching yourself when you're in the process of subconsciously doing something that's going to swing you out of the space you're sitting in that feels miserable? Can you catch it? And then can you stop it? And it's, you know, that in and of itself is a huge learning curve. Because the mind is really good at what it does. Very seductive, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Convincing. It can convince you very easily of whatever it wants you to be convinced of. And I had one of my students recently in a piece of writing just recognize in a moment to say, yeah, like I could see it on a level, I could see it. But what I recognize is that I didn't want to see it. Beautiful statement. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It shows a level of insight that's really, really gorgeous. I can witness that I could see it, but I didn't want to see it. And so I made my choice from the space of, I don't want to see this right now. Okay. Well, okay. So that was an error in judgment, obviously. Right. But just a lesson, right? So nothing to beat yourself up over, certainly. But a beautiful lesson. Because now, so whatever the situation was, and all of you, I'm sure, can put yourself in it, in a space where you could see it, but you could recognize, I don't want to see this. And so I'm not going to. Right? It no longer exists for me. So I'm just going to keep moving in the space that I'd move from if I hadn't seen it. All right. And then how did that turn out for you? Right? So for everyone, I'm sure it's the same story. It didn't turn out well, mostly because you could see it, right? And once you've seen it, now you're responsible for your choices. Seriously responsible for your choices. And if you saw it and then pushed it away because you really didn't want to look at it and made the choice to go with what would be the natural patterned tendency, what feels most comfortable for you, that automatically created the situation where there was no way that was going to work out. It couldn't. You made a choice from the wrong spot. You know, you were at the fork in the road. One road went, you know, straight on and up the path, and the other road went into the brambles and whatever, and that was the one you took because for whatever reason, the brambles and the thorns are more comfortable, right? You're so used to being in pain, and you're so used to being just kind of, it's like the carrot before the horse, you know? Here's the carrot of the mind dangling there, and you're just following along, right? Never get you anywhere. You just go in circles, and to a certain degree, you recognize it, but it's comfortable. It's all you've ever known. You've been doing it forever, right? It takes a lot of guts to go, oh, I can see that. Oh, crap, right? Because that's what it feels like when you see it, the thing you didn't want to see. And then you recognize you'd seen it all along and you kept it pushed back because you didn't want to confront it. And there's that moment, oh crap, because now I have to. Ah! I have to confront that thing. And who am I without that thing, right? Because whatever that thing is, it's a big component of who you think you are. I mean, look at it that way. It's patterned in to the personality. This whatever it is. Let's say you have a savior complex, right? So you're put on the planet to save people, to help. And now you have to go, oh, okay. So every time I do that, it's actually more hurtful than helpful. It's hurting me. It's not benefiting the other person, even though it may look like it initially. But every time I do it, it's just placating the other person, or worse yet, it's, what's the word I'm looking for? Ah! Whatever the word is, I've lost it. But it's making it okay for the other person so that they don't have to do additional work around it. And I know you know what I mean. I can't find it. And okay, so who does it benefit? It doesn't benefit anybody, right? It's unhealthy. All the way around, unhealthy. So you have that beautiful moment of reckoning where you're like, oh, okay. How do I move through this? Because I know what feels natural, and this is where we have to be super careful about going with our feelings. I promise you, 9 times out of 10, what you feel is the right thing to do is the wrong thing to do, because your feelings are dictated by thought, which is dictated by belief, which is dictated by your patterning. So if you're going by what feels right until you're at a certain level, and even then it's not a feeling anymore, it's a knowing. Knowing is just completely different. It's not an emotional feeling. And then that's the other part that for students, they have to recognize, you know, that the feeling is the thing that you're the most comfortable with. And my gosh, if you've got a savior complex, and this feeling comes up and it says, I feel like this is the right thing to do because it's going to help her, him, it, whatever, the situation. Then as a seeker, that's when you go, oh, okay, I feel like, as soon as you say it, I feel like this is the right thing to do for you, it should be a red flag for deeper inquiry. Why do I feel that way? Why do I feel that way? And go in, dive in, and root it out. Right? So we're not only looking for the facts of the situation, although those can be important. So you can pull in the facts. Then you want to get into the emotions that are sitting there. Right? I feel like it's the right thing to do is saying, this is completely based in emotion. That's where you need to look. Why do I feel this way, right? Knowing that my propensity is going to be toward doing the thing that I've been patterned to do that is not necessarily in anybody's best interest. So it doesn't mean you don't do it. Now, this is important to recognize, right? It doesn't mean that you'll end up changing your choice of what you're going to do. Maybe you end up going through with it. But the point is that you go in and you really, really search first before you make any kind of decision. Patterned consciousness is not set up to make good decisions. It just isn't. It runs on its agendas, right? Everything it does is based on its own agenda. And whatever the agenda is, it's selfish at its core. If you have a savior complex, it's still selfish. You understand? The concept around it is, I'm here to help people. I'm here to be of service. But the only reason you do it is because it makes you feel good. And mind hates that one because there are so many saviors out there, you know. Everybody sitting here, I'm sure, would be considered a savior. They make good light workers, right? But there's a lot of work that has to be done around it. Because it is a higher aspect of yourself, absolutely, to be in service. It's the heart, right? But it gets jumbled in 3D. Because being in service in 3D from the space of the lower mind is purely selfish. When you're in service from the heart, that's pure service. But when you're doing something out of service from the space of the lower mind, the identified mind, it's selfish. And you're doing it because it makes you feel good. Because you identify with the victimization of that person or people that you are driven to help, right? So because you know, that's why empathy is a little bit of a trap. You empathize with someone's pain, you take it on as if it's your own, right? And then you feel victimized right along with them. And out of your sense of victimization for them, you take action to swing them out, but ultimately to swing yourself out. Yes, Jillian, you're waving at me.
We've got about 2 minutes.
Okay. You have a question about what I've said?
No, this is very good stuff.
But crystal clear, apparently. I'm doing a good job tonight. Okay. Rashonda, do you have any questions?
Mm-mm. It's good.
You're good.
It is good stuff.
Woo, I'm on a roll. Mira, do you have any questions?
No. I don't have any.
Okay. Megan, do you have any questions?
No, it was crystal clear. I was just going through examples in my head while you were talking.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we can all find them, can't we? Mm-hmm. We can all find examples. Absolutely. And this is what differentiates all of you from the average kind of seeker out there. This is where it gets hard. You know, this isn't easy stuff. What I'm bringing forward tonight, it's hard. I mean, just the average human, can they even listen to their conscience? You know, I mean, by and large, no, they really can't. They refuse to. My son, perfect example. If we go over, I'm sorry. But yesterday or the day before, he had something going on. My husband needed his help. He didn't want to help. He's a 17-year-old boy. Of course, he doesn't want to help. But he recognized on some level that the right thing to do would be to help his father outside with what he needed done. So he came down and he was, you know, my son's stubborn and opinionated and belligerent. So he came downstairs and he's putting his shoes on and he's complaining in every direction about whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, just go out there. And so he made the comment, which was so precious. He made the comment and he said, and he's pointing to his, like his head and his heart simultaneously, you know? And he's like, I hate this thing. I wish this thing didn't exist. And I knew he meant his conscience. Because he understands that his conscience is the voice of God in him. And that his conscience is there to tell him, to be the indicator to him every time he makes a decision or a choice that is out of alignment with his God self. And you just have to listen to it, right? But he's recognizing it's there and it's a pain in his ass. As only, you know, a true ego would. This thing's terrible. I hate it. Get it out of here. But the bottom line of it was he did the right thing that time. Yeah. And if, as a parent, if I can just train them to just listen to that voice, even though they hate it, and follow it, it's worth it, right? It's definitely worth it. So he's not even a conscious seeker like yourselves. Just a kid who's been raised in the teachings, you know. But it shows, like, that's just what the ego does. The ego does not want to have any part of the conscience. It's like, no. Angel on your shoulder, devil on the other, right? Which one are you going to listen to? The ego's always going to run one direction. Okay. All right. So we'll wrap it up for tonight and go into meditation. And I hope you all have a wonderful week. And we'll see you next week for Satsang. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
You are divine.